This week on the Koshcast, we are joined by CBC's Tom Harrington as we look back on the weekend's Premier League action. Arsenal were wobbly at Wembley and got thrashed 1-0 as only Petter kept Spurs in check. It was the De Bruyne and Aguero show at the Etihad where City put five past a lacklustre Leicester, and we'll also chat about easy wins for Liverpool and Newcastle. Elsewhere, Koeman is appointed coach of the Dutch national team and rumours suggest that he's already asked for new signings. Toronto FC add another fullback, and Moomoo of the Week will round us off. Let's go. Hello and welcome to the Koshcast on underthekoshblog.com and at under_thekosh on Twitter. My name is Alex. Mohamed is here.
Hi everyone.
And joining us today, a very special guest, Tom Harrington of CBC Radio 1 now. And yes. Many other things previously. Tom, how are you?
I'm good, thanks. Nice to be here, guys. Thanks.
Thank you for joining us. So in case our listeners who, you know, are like us and spend most of their life just focusing on football, aren't fully aware of who you are or what you do, do you want to give us a bit of background?
You bet. Well, I work at CBC. I host a show called The World This Hour, which is the hourly national international newscast on the radio. So if you're in your car sometime between 1 and 8 on 99.1, then you'll hear me at the hour reading the news. And before that, I was the co-host of Marketplace, the consumer show on CBC for 5 seasons. Before that, I was a sports reporter for CBC and CBC Sports. Covered 8 Olympic Games, multiple Grey Cups, and the World Cup in 2010. So I've been at CBC more than 35 years now.
Amazing. And you still like it?
Oh, loving it. Yeah, I'm pretty lucky. You know, and I got to travel the world. I got to see a lot of great things, especially in sports, which was a real treat. And I've said this many times before, but the highlight of my career was the World Cup in 2010 as a sports reporter. Right. Yeah. I grew up as a soccer fan in Newfoundland. That's where I'm from. I played when I was a kid. And I've always loved the game, so that was a crowning moment.
I think regardless of the fact that it was soccer or not, I think it was just a fun event. Like, just in South Africa, like, it's just a fun atmosphere. It was awesome.
It was a lot of fun. And the country embraced it so much, and the people there were so friendly and open and so excited to have the biggest sporting event in the history of the continent, not just South Africa. Africa had never hosted anything like this before. So it was really big, and they did a really good job. Only South Africa could have hosted it because of the infrastructure that they have, the advantage they have over many countries there, but it was great. I went to Soweto. I went to the Apartheid Museum in Johannesburg. I was stationed there for a month, so I got to see a lot of the city. And I managed to go to 4 matches, including the final.
Nice.
I was there in 2010.
Do you still hear the vuvuzelas ringing in the background?
I can even do a vuvuzela. I have one in my house. No. I have a little corner of my basement is my little sports shrine, and it's to the World Cup I covered, and I have a vuvuzela that I bought in Soweto, not down the street from Nelson Mandela's house.
Amazing. Oh. Yeah. I think if I had one, I would kind of, as people enter my apartment, I just kind of give them a
look. Yeah. Good idea. Well, I even have another souvenir, or what they were selling these in drugstores in Johannesburg called shushuzelas, and they were multicolored earplugs, which people were using and wearing in the games.
See, that is marketing.
Exactly. Like,
we're going to make something and then we're going to make the ante of it and buy them both.
Yeah. Here's your problem, here's your solution.
Exactly.
That's amazing. So, I mean, the games that you saw when you were there, were you stationed in one place or were you able to travel around to different venues?
I went to several venues. I went to, I saw a game between Ivory Coast and Brazil. That was in Soccer City. I saw a match between, I was actually the famous Luis Suarez hand goal against Ghana.
Yeah.
I was at that match.
Wow.
I was at the England-Germany match in Rüstenburg, I think it was, with the famous non-goal call by Frank Lampard.
Would have turned the whole thing around, obviously.
That's what people like to think. Yeah. The way that game was going, David and who, I can't remember who was in goal, David Seaman? No, who's goal for England that day? David James.
James.
Yes,
unbelievable.
And he and Terry botched up the first goal. Anyway, England wasn't going to win that game.
No.
Sorry, don't at me at this, folks. But I remember it well. The Germans were much better that
we
day.
We hammered that game for long enough. We've taken all the abuse. I don't think everywhere.
But I want to share one anecdote, which was the most moving part. They hadn't played each other in the World Cup very much, other than the final and one other time, I think in Italy, perhaps. But before the stadium sat about 42,000 people, and I'd say 22,000 were Brits. And they were all on one end of the stadium, and when they played God Save the Queen, they all sang, and I was overcome.
Wow.
It was so powerful. It was so moving to hear them singing in full voice in that stadium. I'll never forget.
One of those goosebump moments.
Totally. Yeah. I still get them now thinking about it. It was fantastic.
Well, but that's the thing about the England fans. Like, deep down, they know their team is bigger, but they're so loyal to
them
regardless.
Much.
They still think they're amazing. They still really follow them around the continent and the world. And they're just really loyal to their team.
It's an interesting contrast, though, because, I mean, I grew up in England, and it's an odd place for patriotism. Like, often if someone's really patriotic, you kind of just assume they're racist and xenophobic, right?
Yeah.
But then you get these moments where everyone's like really into the Jubilee or England are playing and everyone brings out the little flag.
Mm-hmm.
And it kind of wavers between something that people take the piss out of, right, or really get involved in. It's kind of strange.
And because, unfortunately, the British fans, some, over the years, have earned the reputation of not behaving very well overseas, mm-hmm, there's always a bit of trepidation. People admire the love for the team and shown by the fans.
But they don't want to host them.
They're afraid. Like, yeah, if they invite you over to the house, you're going to break something, kind of thing, right? But if my recollection was, in South Africa, the British fans, for the most part, behave. There weren't a lot of incidents. Mm-hmm. I think there might have been early in the tournament, but for the most part, they behave well. But I do think that the fans in different countries, and certainly South Africa, do appreciate how much the fans love the team. Mm-hmm. They just are wary with everything else that comes with it. But it was still a remarkable, mm-hmm, scene.
Of course, the South African fans had that moment. I think it was first game of the tournament with that amazing Shabalala finish. It was like, what a way to start the tournament. He also had like the, what's her name? Shakira's song was big. And it was just
Waka
the whole
Waka
Waka. Waka. It was a great environment. Yeah. It was a really nice environment. I enjoyed the tournament. Like, World Cups aren't really always about the quality of the football.
No.
It's more kind of bringing everyone together. And even those neutrals start to watch football and they get into it a bit. It's not bad.
And when you're at the final, I was at the final, Soccer City, Holland and Spain, and the Dutch are my team. So it was a weird experience. But when you're there watching the match and there's 90,000 people there, but you know how many people actually watch, and you really feel you're at the center of the most important thing on the planet at that moment. That's quite a feeling to be there, to see it. And unfortunately, it didn't work out the way I hoped. But anyway,
how tired are you of the Dutch coming so close? Like, they're perennially known for coming so close and just missing that last step. They're the known team for that.
I was noticing your tablecloth is orange. Thanks for that.
You're welcome. Yeah.
You know, I've actually been a Dutch fan since the mid-70s, when Cruyff was at his peak. I started following them when I was a teenager, and I'd only reading about them. I was growing up in Newfoundland, and you didn't see soccer on TV very much. I read about the Dutch team. I read about him in particular, and thought, you know, he was this gifted player, and they played this unusual game. And I actually did see the final on TV. They did play it on CBC in '74 when they lost to Germany. And since then, I've just followed them. They've always been my team. I've never given up on them, and despite all the disappointments, and there have been many, and they're so hard to predict because they made the World Cup final in 2010. 2 years later,
I didn't think was going to happen.
Nobody expected that.
They came into the tournament looking quite wobbly. How did they make it that far?
And then 2 years later in the European Championships, they'll score a goal and they're out in three games.
Yeah,
like the same, basically the same team.
Even in the World Cup final, they were a Robin 1-1 away from winning the whole thing.
They could have won the whole thing. And then the World Cup in Brazil, they make it to they finished third. They could have made the final.
Yes.
So it's like, you know, anyway, it's part of me is like I'm set for disappointment. But what I'm hoping now, with, as you guys mentioned in the opening, Ronald Koeman being hired, although I'm hoping he can restore some of the glory, but it's a very hard job. It's one of the toughest jobs, I think, in football is to manage the Dutch, but because of the expectations are so different and because of the echoes of the teams of the past, that's always sort of haunting them all the time. Can you play like those guys?
But when it eventually happens, it's going to be that much sweeter just from everything you've had to endure up to that point. Eventually, hopefully. Problem, like, Koeman or not, it's just the players now. I just feel their quality is a standard below that what we're used to with the Dutch.
Absolutely.
I mean, we sit here and sometimes say, name the Dutch 11. We can't.
No.
We can't. No. And usually, you know, if we can't do that, it's a sign.
I find often it's especially the kind of back six we're not sure about. Like, usually there's a striker or a winger or someone that you can identify or a number 10. But, you know, who's playing left back? It is becoming more and more difficult.
I mean, TFC just signed a Dutch right back.
Yes,
I don't know if he's still in the frame for the Dutch for the national side. I'm not sure. I'd be surprised.
Yeah, he was actually on the pitch in South Africa, believe it or not. But you're right. I mean, I think the Dutch are approaching kind of a point that Canada was with hockey in the '90s, where after these setbacks at the Olympics and not winning tournaments the way we used to do. Canada kind of went nuts and said, we have to do something about the game, and reinvented itself, emphasis on skill and speed, and now Canada wins a lot in men's hockey at the highest level. The women do well anyway. I think the Dutch are kind of at quite an existential moment, but they have to reinvent themselves. They have to go back to some of the ideas and theories of the past, because it's not working. I mean, you're right. There is no real depth of talent. There are no outstanding wave of players coming.
Right.
There's no golden generation on the horizon like Belgium has.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, where's that going to come from? I think they need to kind of do some soul searching.
Well, I think it's a really interesting question, because on the one hand, every team needs an identity, and teams with identities tend to do a lot better than those like England, who just kind of drift through. At the same time, you start to wonder with Holland whether their identity holds them back from progressing, or whether, as you said, they're kind of haunted by the ghosts of these previous teams. So it would be interesting to see which way they go.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's like when Germany, whatever, 2000 or when it was, they decided to just like, we're going to just dismantle this whole thing, start over, and now we've won a Euros and a World Cup. And it's kind of that long-term thinking, and Holland almost has, it's like when England kept shoving Gerrard and Lampard and trying to win things. It's like, you almost have to just say, well, look, we're not good enough, and I'm not aiming to win this World Cup. You know, I'm not still trying to get Robin to, you know, play every game and win every game for us, etc., etc. And let's just plan a bit for the future, because I don't know. They're not going to win things if they still just try to shoehorn players in there, have Van Persie still in the squad. Like, it's just not going to work.
Mm-hmm. And look at what's happening with England now. I believe they're under 17 squad one.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And there is this young wave of young players, 17, 18, 19-year-old players, who in another World Cup cycle, not this one, but the next one, might be very good.
Yeah.
What was that Van Bronckhorst goal in 2010? Oh, that left from left back, like Screamer? Top corner, Screamer, or was it 2014?
I think that was, I thought it was a European Championship goal, not a World Cup goal.
No, I think it was a World Cup
goal.
Really?
Okay.
Yeah?
2008 comes to mind as well.
Yeah.
Maybe.
Oh, were really good.
That was great. Was it Russia-Holland game with Arshavin killing that? So yes. That was a great tournament. Yeah. That was a lot of
incredible.
Fun.
Yeah. While we're still talking about kind of World Cup issues, Toronto may well be involved, 2026.
Right.
I just wanted to see what you think. You know, as someone who's covered events, major events, what that would be in this city, or what that would mean for Toronto.
Well, someone asked me at work the other day, you know, what do I think of Toronto being part of a bid to host the World Cup? And I said, you know, and I said, in all honesty, Pan Am Games, Toronto hosted the Pan Am Games, a multi-sport games, it's important. But the World Cup is much bigger than that, even if it's a slice of it. Mm-hmm. And he said, it's the single biggest sporting event in the world. I covered 8 Olympic Games. Believe me, the World Cup is the biggest sporting event because it's only one sport and everybody's watching it, mm-hmm. unlike the Olympics where people have different interests. So Toronto being part of a North American event, I think it's really important, would be great for the city. Toronto could do it. Obviously, BMO Field is one venue. I think my understanding is the World Cup bid would involve not also involve cities other than Toronto. I think Montreal might be involved, Vancouver, Ottawa, Vancouver. Yeah,
I think Calgary's on the list. But
yeah, I think they have to decide. The problem is with a limited amount of games mm-hmm. in a short period of time, and most of the games that Canada would host would be early round games, not towards the round of 16 in the semifinals and finals. Travel would be an issue to start moving teams from West Coast to East Coast, like in the U.S. as well. So like in the U.S. World Cup in 94, they had groups but in different parts of the U.S. And as the field narrowed, so did the geography of the tournament narrowed, right? So they're going to have to do the same thing here. So I think going out west to have one game, for example, might not be a good idea. But we'll see how it works out. But I think in terms of Toronto being a host, the city would be great. The soccer knowledge and enthusiasm is enormous here, so I don't think you'd have a problem selling tickets.
No.
So I think it'll be a great event.
I mean, we went to Chile versus Brazil at
Sky Dome,
which is huge, and it was full. And this was a friendly that was, you know, inconsequential, no one cared.
Well, not only that, it was like 2010 or 11 or something, wasn't it? It was ages
ago. I think it would be really ironic somehow if Defoe makes the England team. And then he has to go from West Coast to East Coast during the
2026. He might still be playing.
If he's making the team, England's got a lot of problems.
Yeah. Two things. One, if anyone cares, the Van Bronckhorst goal was in 2010 versus Uruguay.
Okay.
Yeah. Second thing is John Herdman. Any thoughts on him managing the Canadian national team over Zambrano, who's apparently doing a good job?
Yeah, I thought that was very odd. The whole development, the way it was handled, frankly, by the Canadian soccer authorities was very strange. You know, the players like Christine St. Clair didn't found about it on Twitter, I believe.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Herdman did a great job coaching the women's team, had great success. Everybody knows that. Making that transition to a men's team, bringing the same coaching principles, perhaps that would work. Why wouldn't it necessarily? I think, but I don't understand why they dumped Zambrano so quickly. I wasn't paying a lot of attention, to be honest with you, on our World Cup campaigns and our efforts to develop the program, but he had pretty good pedigree. And then suddenly he was, how long was he in the job?
Maybe 6 months, 9 months.
So either something happened.
Yeah.
There's something that they're not telling us,
and
or players on the team said he's not the guy for some reason, or there was some issue off the pitch that was an issue. That
I think they just tried to not lose Herdman in the program. I think they just valued him so high that when he said, okay, I'm done with the women's team. I have offers for, I think it was English, women's national team, etc., etc. Mm-hmm. I think they just wanted to somehow keep him in the Canadian football program. And they just had no choice, or they would have lost them. I think that was really what it came down to.
Yeah, there are a couple narratives. That is one. The other is that Zambrano asked for changes that weren't forthcoming, and he was frustrated by that, and thus they were frustrated by him.
Both of the scenarios make sense.
Yeah.
The concern I would have is if there's a likelihood you know that Herdman was probably going to leave. Mm-hmm. So you preemptively offer him the job rather than give it to Zambrano, and then suddenly Herdman's, who maybe he wanted it and then decided to go. It's a very, anyway, it seemed a little ham-handed. Right. The way it was done, and it's unfortunate because I think Zambrano might have had the potential to do something, and he seemed to like being here. So, which is a challenge, bringing foreign coaches into Canada, and they look at the infrastructure and the way the program is going and say yay or nay. He wanted to be here, and it's unfortunate it didn't work out.
Yeah. All right. Well, I was going to do it later, but while we're kind of in Toronto and Canada, why don't we do it now? Toronto FC, incredible season last season. Mm-hmm. I'm excited for the start of the new season. Were you able to get out to many games during the...
I've been a season ticket holder since day one.
Okay, cool.
I got my tickets 10 minutes after they went on sale. Seriously, back in 2007. So it was my chance to, A, support the sport, support the national team, which is going to use BMO Field as its home field as well. And so I've been a supporter since the beginning.
The price doesn't go up of season ticket, right? Like, you buy it once and that's it?
Pretty much. It was interesting. One of the reasons I've renewed, they've become a great team. I almost gave up after about year five. Right. I was so angry.
No one can blame you.
Yeah, I was like, I was watching, the football was so awful. And the stadium, which was raucous, had become kind of a mausoleum, and the energy had gone. And so am I dragging myself out on a Saturday afternoon when it's raining to watch these guys play this kind of game? And they'd already, the De Rosario fiasco had happened the previous year, and another season of really bad football. And so I almost gave up. But you know what I said? You know, the Chicago Cubs at that point had got 100 years without a World Series. So I figured I should stay. Like, well, I can't be a fair weather fan. That's not what a fan does. So I stayed, and they delivered. Ironically, last year, I was at BMO with a friend of mine watching the final where they lost. This year, it was a special occasion. My wife's birthday was coming up, so we had to plan a trip. We booked the trip in, I think, August. And by October, I realized, if they make the final...
yep.
I'm not going to be here.
Yeah.
And I was not.
Yeah.
So I could bring up my phone and show you where I was. I was in the Turks and Caicos at a little bar in a resort by myself watching the game with my TFC scarf.
They were showing
it. It was on ESPN, right?
Oh, right.
Yeah.
Right.
So yes. The bartender, I was asking, a guy named Michael was the bartender, and he said to me, so what are we doing? I said, well, we're watching the MLS Cup. What's that? He didn't have none of a clue. I explained what the MLS was. Mm-hmm. It's like the Premier League. It's okay. And mm-hmm. He's playing. This is Toronto, where I live in Canada. They're playing Seattle, which is an American city. So it's Canada against the U.S. I said, okay, sure. Yeah, it's fine. Yeah.
It's the World Series.
We want Canada to win. Yes, we want Canada to win. Anyway, that's
the guys in red. The guys in red.
The guys in red. I watched the final. I was thrilled. They were so good. They dominated.
Great goal by
Altidore, too. So I was thrilled for the city, for the fans who stuck with it, for the real hardcore supporters who I even did a couple of stories on when they started because I was still covering sports. So I was thrilled. It was just a great moment and a crowning achievement for after years and years of frustration.
Not even that far. Like last year, the frustration from last year, just losing on penalties to a team that didn't have a shot on target, et cetera. The same team again. I mean, you couldn't write it. Like, no. It was just...
We were in the same boat too. We went to the final last year.
Yeah,
you know, froze our digits off.
Yeah, I've never been so cold in my life. I've been here for 10 years. I have literally never been so cold in my life.
Yeah, and the worst bit wasn't even the game. It was the line up to get through the tunnel afterwards.
Yeah,
when you're just standing there, you've lost. You just want to get
such
out
a bad design where everyone's trying to get under the GO Train tunnel.
Like, I know.
Thousands of people. It was unfortunate. It was heartbreaking.
Yeah.
Actually heartbreaking. The game, it went to extra time, it didn't help, and I was like, just end it now.
And then the former TFC keeper makes the save of the game to preserve the victory. It was disappointing. So it was disappointing not to be there this year. I would have been there for sure, and one of my soccer travel buddies went with a friend and took my tickets, so that I was represented in spirit. But still, to be able to watch down there with my TFC scarf and my T-shirt on and watch the game was still pretty awesome.
It's a pretty cool story to just remember where you were
when
that happened.
Absolutely,
you know, you never know if it's going to happen again. We hope so, but if it doesn't for a while, then you remember I was in Turks and Caicos sitting there in that bar. It's a good story.
It's fun, and it was like they've the last couple of years, the way they've rebuilt that team, I have to give management credit because there were so many bad decisions for so long. When you're just beginning to wonder, is this going to be a... And you saw other teams coming into the league and making the playoffs, and they were younger than TFC was, and you're going, what the heck, you know?
Yeah.
So it was quite a moment. I was thrilled. Yeah.
Beautiful. Yeah, I mean, that's the thing. It's the reason that, like, we've been quite excited about the development of Canadian Premier League, because if we can get that experience and... extrapolated out across Canada,
right,
it would just be incredible.
Well, I'm old enough to remember, and maybe you guys aren't, but there was a CSL, right, back in the 90s, 80s and 90s, which I used to cover. And, there were teams in Edmonton and Hamilton and Ottawa and Toronto and Montreal had a team. I used to cover the Impact before they were the Impact. back in that league. And so there were pockets of support everywhere. But now you have a strong franchise in Vancouver, a strong franchise in Montreal, and a strong one in Toronto. And now with the Premier League coming in, the idea is, you know, development, opportunities for players to make a bit of money, maybe become a little bit of a feeder system will be great.
Yeah. All right. That's Canada, I think.
Anything else?
Yeah.
Premier League?
Yeah, let's do it. Let's start then at Wembley with the North London Derby.
Well, why would we do that?
Just you know, get the pain out of the way.
Okay.
So, Tom, for context, Mohanan and I are Arsenal fans.
Oh.
Your allegiances lie with...
For now.
I see. Yeah. I'm a Liverpool man.
Right. Yes. Okay. I remember we had El Amin on recently, and I think I first noticed you two commiserating online about some Liverpool results.
Right.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Anyway, Wembley, North London Derby. Mohanad, is it possible to get thrashed 1-0?
And
if so, was this it?
This was it. This should not have ended 1-0 for sure. I mean, as much as Petrček tried to keep giving them the ball to score more and more goals, he also made saves when he needed to. It was weird. He made a lot of really good saves, but at the same time tried to give them as many goals as possible.
Very confusing.
Very confusing.
Generous, I would say.
Yeah. I don't know. This was, coming into the game, obviously with the Everton game and Aubameyang and Mkhitaryan, and you know, football fans live week to week. Yeah. Whatever. Like, I know Arsenal aren't good enough, but then you see that 5-0 thrashing of Everton, and you know Everton are trash, but you're like, oh my god, yes, this is the best thing ever, we're going to win the league. Okay, so I came into it with some form of confidence. Didn't happen. First 10 minutes were okay, and then it was kind of all Tottenham from there. Mm-hmm. Kane missed a few easy headers as well on the way to his goal, and it was just... There wasn't anything solid about Arsenal. It was just 10 people in red passing the ball to each other.
Trying to,
without really any form of tactics or plan. Mm-hmm. It's disheartening. And that, again, this is why a lot of things fall at the manager's feet, is because people say, well, it's not his fault that Lacazette misses a one-on-one.
Mm-hmm.
Sure, but it's his fault that we don't have a shot on target. Well, that wasn't even on target until the 85th minute. So, I don't know. I'm tired of saying the same thing about Arsenal every week, and I don't know what the solution is. I really don't know.
They are an empty vessel. Arsenal, because I remember we actually saw them on our... We went to the Emirates a couple of years ago on our last soccer trip, and we were actually at a game where they played Palace.
Oh. And when was it, last season?
It was 1-1 draw, so it was 2016.
Okay. We were at
the same game.
Balassi scored?
Yeah, and then Sanchez header, the keeper. Yeah,
really?
Yeah. Bellerin couldn't cross
the ball. That's unbelievable.
Bellerin couldn't cross the ball all game.
But if you remember, my recollection was Arsenal bossed the game.
Yeah,
they pretty much owned the game. They couldn't do anything with it. And then one decent chance by Balassi, and people said, oh, Cech should have stopped it. Well, if I recall, it was sort of against the grain, shot it going the other opposite way. Mm-hmm. Like, it was a well-taken goal, I thought, but we were all sitting there, and one of the four of our group is a diehard. He makes you guys look lame as a fan. He was nuts, and he wanted to open his veins. He was so upset.
Well, that was the hype of Wenger out as well.
Yeah, it was, you're right.
Season.
That's
it
right.
It was quite bad.
No, I remember the atmosphere being particularly toxic.
Yeah.
When Balassi's shot went in, it wasn't even that late into the game. I think it was 60-something minutes, maybe.
Right.
A guy next to us he was with his parents, his elderly parents. He just stood up and he's like, I'll see you next week. And he just left.
Wow.
He's just like, he knew what was going to happen. Yeah. He knew that nothing was, you know, going to change.
And if I recall, something Theo Walcott did in that game as well, it was kind of embarrassing, wasn't it, that match?
Or maybe
it was
another, it's a fair guess.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's fair guess. Probably on the way out, he did that stupid clap he did when he substitutes. Yeah.
And I don't envy being my friend who is a diehard Arsenal fan. I mean, and we can talk all you want about the Dutch, but that's every 4 years. This is every week. So it's frustrating, and again they're living it. It's a bit like being haunted with ghosts of the past, you know. Like and Wenger's still there, and he represents greatness, but it's greatness that is.
Well, I think
past.
Wenger is the ghost of the past. Like literally, that's who he is right now. And people are talking about, is his legacy being tarnished? And I think so, because at this point it's just people can't wait to push him out the door, and every season more and more people are joining that bandwagon, they're joining that side of the conversation. And I don't know, people are always like, well, wait until he whatever releases a book and tells you all the secrets that he couldn't tell you now, etc., etc. But at the end of the day, that doesn't stop you having a tactical plan, that doesn't stop you having a good defensive backbone, that doesn't, you know, we have no consistency whatsoever. Mustafi half of the game looks world class and unbeatable, and the other half of the game looks like he's just a kid playing Sunday football, and he can't. He's just attracted to a ball, like a moth to light.
Well, he is Arsenal in a microcosm. Then I mean, he sums it up
exactly.
Very well.
Yeah. Now, are they a bit? Would you say that as Arsenal fans, would you say there's a criticism of MLSC, the people who own Toronto FC and the Leafs, that they make lots of money, the stadium's packed, they have tons of money from TV rights, there's no real sense of urgency to be pushing for the top. They can even make a Champions League, which looks like they won't do this year. Do you think there's any of that?
People are definitely cognizant that Stan Kroenke is a bad owner. If you look at his franchises in the States and in North American sports, that said, Arsenal spend a lot of money.
Yeah.
It's not a money problem. They've spent right. $100 million on two strikers in the last 6 months.
True.
And plenty of money in the last, you know, 4 or 5 years. That said, if Kroenke as an owner was desperate to win something, Arsene Wenger wouldn't still be there.
Right.
So that's where it comes in. It's not as if he's doing as bad a job owning Arsenal as he is with his other
yes.
franchises. But yes, if he was urgent to win something, he'd have changed things sooner.
That's
right?
exactly the nail on the head. Kroenke, for me, it's not about spend more money. People
right.
yell, spend more. No.
No.
It's about that will to win. Where do you want to be? What's your objective for this team? If it is to win a Champions League and to win a Premier League, money aside, it's putting in people in place that can make you achieve that. It's being ruthless with the managers, being ruthless, all that kind of stuff. I think we spend enough money. I think Arsene Wenger has brought in, you know, a 35 million waste in Mustafi, a 35 million waste in Xhaka, a 50 million Lacazette that now he's replaced 6 months later. It's not that there's no money. It's the choices are bad with that money. And then on the Kroenke side, it's not being ruthless enough and being happy with that fourth place, which is not even a thing anymore. Like, I mean, we're finishing sixth every season now. This season, lucky to be sixth even if. So, yes, the Kroenke thing a little bit, but it's about running the club and not about the money for me with
mm-hmm.
him.
Yeah.
Because I think you have a Pep Guardiola with the players we have, and we're not sitting in sixth.
No.
It just comes down to the manager. And unfortunately, it's not the players or Kroenke as much as the manager. Just he's the one constant that never changes.
Right.
Kroenke has changed, and they've changed everybody around him. Players have come and gone.
Mm-hmm.
It's just he's the only variable that hasn't changed. And why not at least take a punt? Maybe it's not his fault, but let's do something different. let's just try.
Yeah. Anyway, let's have a look at the other half of this game. Tom, as someone who grew up watching, you know, the Dutch teams of the 70s,
mm-hmm.
how do you feel about the Spurs side? Because to me, there are actually quite a lot of similarities in the way that everyone is comfortable on the ball in every area.
Interchangeable.
Of the pitch.
Yeah.
The defenders are very comfortable on the ball.
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot of positional rotation.
Mm-hmm. I think they're loaded, actually. I think Moussa Dembele is like one of these great players who people are starting to realize how really good he is.
Mm-hmm.
Physically, his physical presence always impressed me, but his skill set, his technical ability, and his ability in the midfield, I think he's really. Arguably, now Kane is brilliant around the goal, and Dele Alli is talented, but a little unpredictable.
Mm-hmm.
Dembele's like, he's like a Doug Gilmore or a Michael Bradley, kind of a player who's a take charge, physical presence, great vision. And I think he's going to make the Belgians really difficult to beat in the World Cup. I think if he stays healthy, they're going to be really good with him in the midfield. So I'm a big fan of his in particular. They have I like Vertonghen, I like their back. Lloris, as a former goalkeeper, he's a world-class goalie. They have a lot of really great tools. Obviously, this year, Noah's catching City.
Pochettino is a great tool. He's a great manager.
Great manager, yeah. Other than City right now, they're probably the best team in the league, I'd say. And I think, do City and Tottenham play?
I think they have to play each other once.
They still have to play each other once.
That's
going to
be great.
I
can't wait to see that game. That's going to be great.
I think we'll be at Wembley. City beat Spurs quite easily, which I think was at the Etihad.
Yeah.
And that was earlier. Was that earlier on, that
yeah.
game? I think
yeah,
it was,
yeah.
right? I think right now the Spurs are playing.
But yeah, I think having that good of a manager as well is a big asset. Because you look at someone, I mean, we'll get to them. I don't want to get too much of a deal. But
mm-hmm.
someone like United, who
mm-hmm.
you put it on paper and they don't have a worse squad than Spurs, but then you see the difference in style of how he wants them to play, how he gets them to play.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Mourinho is really holding back, I think, a really talented group of players. So Arsene Wenger similarly, etc., etc. So I just feel, I mean, Pep is getting so much out of players that we thought was not possible, and it's Raheem Sterling and stuff, and we'll talk about it. But there's so much now in managers' hands.
Mm-hmm.
Back in the day, you had one or two good teams, and they only had the good players, so they dominated games regardless.
Mm-hmm.
Arsene Wenger had his invincibles, and I think any, you know, whatever. They're good enough with a manager without to do it. Barca of 09, same thing.
Mm-hmm.
Now, too many teams have good players. So what's the difference? The difference is your style of play and your manager, because
yeah.
everybody has superstars now.
And you see it more in terms of players that you don't think have that much talent to begin with. You look at someone like Ben Davis, right, who came from Swansea. He was a decent enough young left back, and then a couple of years under Mauricio Pochettino, and he—I mean, there aren't many to choose from, but he's one of the best left backs in the league, like quite some ways. And it's—I
think,
you know,
he
put in the beautiful.
And I think
ball
you're right to your point about the Dutch. It's like the way they play is just—it's easy on the eye, right? And you don't get a lot of that in Premier League anymore. There are a few teams. Swansea a few years ago played that great one with Brendan Rodgers for like a season. I said, "Wow, this is great. Who are these guys?" Then it's kind of disappeared.
Yeah. Back to this game, though, I felt throughout the game, people are excited about the shiny new Aubameyang signing and everything. But when you actually look back and look at this game, he had the exact same troubles that Lacazette has been having for half a season. It's no service. Even against Everton, he scored that one chip offside goal, but he didn't touch the ball almost all game. And it's the same exact problem. It's just he's not getting that kind of stick because he's only been here for a game. And no service whatsoever to him. Ozil and Mkhitaryan are playing as wingers almost, but they have no pace whatsoever. So when Ozil pings that ball to Mkhitaryan, he's not taking it and running down the line because he has to stop and cut back and look up. And it's not like the players aren't set up for the system we're trying to play. And like I said, yes, he'll get one run, you know, behind the defensive line, but that's not enough. You're relying on one instant in a game to try and make something happen.
I did feel particularly bad for him. I mean, he came on with about 10 minutes to go, had by far the two best chances Arsenal had in the whole game, missed them, and just looked like the world was on his shoulder. Mm-hmm. I mean, he looked so depressed.
You know, he misses that in the 20th minute. People forget about it, no one talks about it, but he comes on and he literally makes 2-3 really good runs, much better than anything we've had up to that point. And yes, the finish was whatever. It could have been better, but at the end of the day, I don't think, you know, it's not on him that we didn't get anything out of the game. It's a little bit unfair on Lacazette.
It's a hard place to play, too, I think, being a player playing at Arsenal. It's one of those clubs in England that's, it's like playing for the Leafs or the Canadians in hockey or something like that, or the Yankees. It's a very hard club. The scrutiny is really intense. The fans are very knowledgeable and tolerate very little.
And very online.
Very online. Yeah, that too. Very so, like, I mean, Lacazette is the kind of player who I think could be gone next season. He wouldn't even be there.
Totally.
Yeah. Anything else about this game? Nothing really. Kane played really well. He scored his 21st goal of the season. Great header. I don't think it was a foul on Koscielny. I think he just jumped. He did that Ronaldo jump where he was just head and shoulders.
He was way above everybody.
I didn't think he had that in him. He was extremely high.
Yeah, people think of us as playing on the ground and what he can do on the ground, but he's actually really good in the air.
Yeah.
And that was sort of a textbook header. There's like, if you're going to coach it, show it on video. Kids, this is how you hit the ball. This is how you do it. The other way, where the goalie's going, you know.
Perfect.
Classic.
Well, remember the one he scored, I think it was it 2015 or 16 in the derby? And it was similar ball, similar header.
Right? Yeah.
Well, he's got the technique right. He jumps early. He heads it always back against where the ball's coming because that's much easier than trying to kind of help it along. Mm-hmm. And again, it's theory and the basics, and he does them all right. And he always seems to be open somehow, even though everybody's like, well, you're playing Tottenham, just stand on Kane. But he always seems to find space.
He's very good
roam
at finding space. He really is.
And even his shooting technique, like you can see, he kind of tenses his whole body. He gets that contact right. And he's got the basics down, and he's a great player.
I think if you were starting the season now, you would have to say that it would be a battle to first place between City and Spurs. That's my view. Like, based on the way if you look at how they're both, the two clubs are playing now, even including Liverpool and United and Chelsea in the top sort of six, if I'd say it wouldn't be a 17, it would be a head-to-head race to the finish between
City
those two clubs.
City started very strong.
Yeah.
Very strong.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
I think you might be right. And I think that's actually been the case in the last couple of seasons. Spurs have come very close to winning the title, but it has been that first few months where they draw games they should win. Mm-hmm.
Well, you've got the famous Kane not scoring in whatever August or October or whatever it is. So, I mean, let's talk about City then, since we brought them up. They beat Leicester, who, you know, just outside the top six are probably, you know, a very good team, but they easily dismantled them 5-1. Mm-hmm. Aguero somehow just keeps adding these goals to his season, but quite under the radar. I mean, people talk about Salah, people talk about Kane. De Bruyne, not from a scoring point of view, but from a player of the season.
Right.
He just scored 3 goals. He's up to 21 or 20
four.
Goals.
He got 4.
He got 4.
Yeah. He got one in the 90th minute.
Yeah. So he's got, that was brilliant too. He's got 21 goals now, equal to Salah, who obviously is having a brilliant season.
Right, with a broken rib.
Yep.
Yeah.
So, he's,
was
it in Holland where he broke his
rib? He was in
Holland on this spot.
His Uber ride was in a car accident.
Right. No, it's funny, isn't it? He's not someone who seems like a prominent figure this season.
No.
But you're right. He's up there at the top of the scoring charts.
I mean, we always talk about how I personally am under the impression, at least at the beginning of the season, that Pep kind of doesn't think Aguero is his main guy. I thought he was kind of going to start easing him out. Jesus was going to be his main guy because he wants more of that link up. Yep. And he's more suited to the way Pep wants to play. But I think Aguero is forcing Pep's... I mean, obviously, Jesus is injured. But even before that, Aguero is really just forcing Pep's hand into play him. How are you going to drop me now? Mm-hmm. Even though I truly believe that is what Pep wants to eventually do, he just can't. He's forced to play him because he's scoring goals.
Well, and I think going back to your comment about Aubameyang and service with Arsenal, the thing about Aguero is, as great as he is, he can't do it unless you got guys like De Bruyne passing the ball. And
what
De Bruyne,
who
I think, yeah, and I think he's De Bruyne right now. I have him on my Premier League pool team, had the whole season. Yep. So, but he to me is I think he may be the best player in the world right now. If I was literally drafting a team, he'd probably be my first pick.
I agree. It's a good point.
100%.
Yeah, I think Aguero is brilliant. He's the classic poacher. He finds little plate, you know, telephone booth spaces and makes it work because he's small, low center of gravity, hard to knock off the ball, and knows where the goal is almost everywhere. Anywhere inside the 18-yard box, he'd have his eyes closed and turn around and put it in the net. Like, he's that good. But he's not the kind of player who can do that on his own. He's not going to beat a bunch of guys one-on-one. He's great at finding space and needs people to find him. And with guys like De Bruyne and Dembele and others, not Dembele, but I think of the other midfielder.
Silva.
Yes. Then you've got that service we're talking about. If you have to figure that if an Arsenal had a service, had somebody in the midfield like that, maybe these guys would be
better.
It
also helps that they have a Fernandinho behind them who's having an absolute beast of a season.
Right.
Silva is he's almost playing box-to-box at this age, which is insane.
Mm-hmm.
And Fernandinho doesn't obviously get a lot of credit because, you know, he's defensive and City are all about going forward, but he just sits there. And it must be so nice to know that this person's behind you.
Yeah,
and you're going to be fine.
Mm-hmm.
You have license to go forward, do your thing, and I'm going to be absolutely okay behind me. And it helps De Bruyne for sure to know that he has that security.
Yeah. I actually think Fernandinho, and some people will be angered by this maybe, but or angered by it, but I actually think Fernandinho has kind of taken the Makalele role and developed it somewhat.
Mm-hmm.
Because Makalele was brilliant defensively.
Well, he was more of a Kante. Like, he was more like, cut it off, my forward passing isn't the best, but just defensive. But Fernandinho's doing both.
He goes both ways.
So. The other thing about this game, which can be overlooked because of the brilliance, is like it's astonishing, the collapse of Leicester.
Yeah.
I mean, it's like as amazing as that story was when they won, it's not quite as amazing as what's happened to them, but it's in the ballpark in terms of shock about how they've fallen so fast.
Yeah.
It's, you know, when Ranieri was fired, I actually tweeted about it saying, it's the ultimate commentary on professional football in England that less than a year, let alone the season, that he being celebrated weeping on the sideline and all the rest of it, and then he's gone.
Yeah, one of the biggest sporting achievements in the last decades.
The nuttiest, craziest sports story, and then the guy is toast. It was shocking, and nothing's happened. And then the whole issue with Mahrez not being transferred and being pouting and not. The distraction that was to the club and bringing it back in but not in the lineup and being in the room and all that. Leicester went in there in such a foul psychological mood. I didn't expect anything probably than the result we got.
Yeah, I agree. And Puel, I think, set them up for failure here. He went to a back five, which is not something they usually do.
Mm-hmm.
And what that did, it take someone out of the midfield. And City are going to dominate the midfield anyway, probably, but why give it to them? Just hand it over the keys. Anyway.
Right.
On City's tails, if I can even say that.
No, you can't.
No, nobody is.
Yeah, are the... well, I think they're now the noisy neighbors. Who's the noisy neighbors now? Because it's always been City, but I don't know. I feel like United are slowly going to have to start being the noisy neighbors because City are really taking over Manchester at this point. But United are trying to keep up as much as they can with City. Didn't do a good job today of losing to Newcastle.
They did a great job of losing
to Newcastle. It's not to Newcastle. It's to Rafa Benitez. And that's the part that I enjoy. It's Mourinho losing to Rafa Benitez because they don't like each other.
It's a shame, actually. I mean, the two guys that are under the weather today are both United fans.
How convenient. Maybe,
yeah, very convenient,
Oh, your two broadcast partners?
Yeah. But
I didn't see that match. I went on my phone and checked.
You just
the scoreboard.
Enjoyed the result.
It's a classic. Like, what? I mean, I love Newcastle fans to begin with. I think they're just some of the great fans in England.
Yeah.
So I'm happy for them. You said something earlier about United and the kind of the group of players. On paper, you sort of look and say, you know, these guys. That's a pretty good team. You know, Pogba and Lukaku and
now Sanchez and Martial and Rashford
and their goalkeepers arguably top two or three of the world. And what? So it's and you going back to management again and the role of managers. you look at Mourinho, the special one, and you know the bloom is off the rose.
Mm-hmm.
It seems to me like the emperor has no clothes in this case. He's not the guy.
Do you have one more?
Oh, wait, can we?
It's usually three.
Right? Yeah, yeah. The bad things come in threes. But either way, he's not what we think he was.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And this is not just this year. This is last year, I would say. It's the year before.
Well, okay. People. Again, we talk about this a lot. He's in the Champions League now, but only because he came sick. He came last because it's top six.
Yes.
He came last. Yeah. Like, Mourinho, in his first season as United manager, came last. Mm-hmm. And I don't think that's unfair to say. Because you're fighting those top six teams, nobody else. Like, everything else doesn't matter to United fans.
Mm-hmm.
So, he literally came last in his first season after signing a 90 million Pogba, etc., etc. I don't know how it's easily just brushed aside because it's Mourinho. If it was anybody else, no matter even winning the Europa League, I just don't think they would have survived coming sixth.
No, I mean, he was saved. Not that I think they would have necessarily sacked him after making such a big play to get him. But he was saved by winning the Europa League. What goes unsaid is how easy that Europa League was to win for that United team.
But he also,
they barely got out of second gear in a lot of those games. They didn't play anyone substantial. Ajax in the final didn't put up much of a fight.
Mm-hmm.
He also intentionally threw
the league. It's not like he did both and came maybe third and won the Europa League. He threw it. Like, I think a few games to go, he was like, well, this doesn't matter anymore. And he played nobody in the league games. And so what, United are now kind of condensed to what, a cup team? And everybody's all right, oh, cool. Like, mm-hmm. I don't know. I just feel like he doesn't get enough. because it's Mourinho. And I feel like, until he realizes that there's nothing wrong with coming second to City if you were entertaining your fans every week,
mm-hmm.
and you're one of the best teams playing football, if you were like a Tottenham,
mm-hmm.
playing that kind of football, I don't think anyone would be on his back. It's just that pragmatism is way too much at this point.
Well, there's also something to be said simply for, I want to just make sure that we are still important in Manchester. Like, that rivalry is so intense. I said, here's the plan, guys. For the rest of the season, we can't catch them, but we're going to outplay them. We're going to be more fun to watch. We're going to be more entertaining. People are going to talk about us. Even though they're winning the title, they're going to say, let's go see United play, not the other guys. Like, from a personal pride within the city itself, it sounds kind of naive, but I think they have nothing else to play for. And if he's not under any pressure to perform as the manager, which apparently he's not, no one's suggesting he's out. So why not try something different? Why not think differently and play that game, kind of game you're talking about?
It's true. And especially in a game like this against Newcastle, who I'm not saying they're easy to beat. Rafa Benitez is a good manager. He lines them up well.
Mm-hmm.
But they haven't been great this season. They've struggled to score goals. You would think United would just go out and attack them.
Right.
I mean, it's that simple.
You've got
these players on the pitch. You've got Martial, you've got Lingard, Alexis Sanchez.
Yeah.
Just go out and attack them.
Yeah.
And United were just so bizarrely devoid of creativity in this game. And Bernie, one of our colleagues, wants me to have a go at Alexis Sanchez. who, by the way,
was their best player, wasn't he?
Early on, he was the one that looked like he would.
Well, United didn't play like the rest of the game.
No, well, right. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So you know, a lot of stuff went through him early on. He did actually miss an open goal later in the game, so that was a thing.
Good.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. but the thing is that before he came in, I think they were on a run of having won some games 3-4-0.
Mm-hmm.
They were actually playing quite well.
Mm-hmm.
They brought in Alexis Sanchez, and I understand why they did that. It's an opportunity to bring in an ostensibly world-class player. But it's kind of disrupted everything.
Well, mm-hmm. I think City have so much money, they must have bought some luck, I also feel, because they are so lucky that they did not end up with Sanchez. It would have just disrupted everything Pep tries to do. He would not have fit into that free-flowing football where everyone just releases the ball as fast as they can. And I think they really, really, really dodged a bullet with Sanchez there. Mm-hmm. And United kind of took that bullet for them. And I know he suits United a bit more because it's more of kind of that you do it yourself.
Individual.
And individualism and stuff. But I think United's biggest problem is still Lukaku. I don't think he's good enough.
He was the best player in this game.
No, but in general, like when you think of United, again, we said this last podcast, as an Arsenal fan, I still believe they're the biggest team in England, even with the way City are playing. They're still the biggest team in England, and in Europe, when people look into the Premier League, it's still United.
Yeah.
And I just feel...
As a brand.
Yes. And I just feel like they kind of forever represented the Premier League in Europe. Like, it was United, they're doing well, the Premier League's doing well.
Mm-hmm.
And I just feel like Lukaku was never good enough. I don't care if it's 75 million or even 20 million. I don't think he's good enough to start for United, especially a team that wants to win Champions League, they want to win leagues. I think their biggest thing, they should just go all out. You know, 250 million, Harry Kane, whatever it takes. Kane is that guy that would just really complete the puzzle for them. And they need a world-class striker. I just don't think Lukaku is it.
Mm-hmm.
That's all.
Mm.
That's fair. I'm telling you right now, he wasn't the problem in this game.
No,
at all.
Sure.
But Yeah, maybe.
There's getting back to management again, and I've, again, about a, I have a theory, sort of a workplace theory, which is that, you know, happy people are productive people. And I think that Mourinho's dour personality, I think he's the kind of, he would be the type of manager, I think he is the kind of manager who players, well, if they take their cue from him, they don't play with any joy, right? You watch the Spurs play, it's like a, they're having a gas. They're out there just kicking the ball around, having a hoot, right? Like, they're playing with a lot of, and like Liverpool's like that too. I think they get it from Klopp.
City are the same.
City, very much. They run. It's like, this is a boy, this is a boys' game, and we're playing like boys and kids. Yeah, we're making lots of money. We're having fun. United under Mourinho, and I thought even Chelsea even under Mourinho, they sort of, it was like Tiger Woods playing golf. There's no joy in the game. It's sort of this lethal aspect to it, that sort of this darkness, right? That I think there's an element of that in the way that when United plays, that negative energy, like the on paper in Newcastle at halftime, you go into the room, you're by Mourinho, I say, here guys, here's their lineup, here's our lineup. You know what to do.
It's like when Alex Ferguson said, it's just Spurs.
Lads, and they were
like, lads of Spurs. 3-0 down in the game 5-2. I think that's a really, really good point about the negative. I think they're just scared of the next loss. They're just worried about the next negative thing that would happen. And then the media
the next
on.
Wrong pass.
Yes, they're just literally worried about the next thing.
Like, but players playing on eggshells. You can't run very fast running on eggshells. So, you know, that's what they're playing like.
But I also think it's interesting because you're right. That's his vibe, that darkness, that... the world's against us, siege mentality kind of thing. He loves that. But this is not a place, or it's a harder place to instill that kind of that vibe, because it's just not, it's harder to believe. Like, the world is not against Manchester United. You've had it easy on many levels. You know, you've got all the money in the world. You've got some of the best players. There's no, you know, refereeing conspiracy. It's just, if you try to instill that kind of mentality, it's just laughable. And so I think he's struggling to kind of just be a positive force.
I think it's much easier to instill that at Chelsea. No offense to Chelsea, but they had nothing happening until Mourinho got there. So he could kind of instill whatever baseline he wants. Because there wasn't one that existed.
They had
so,
no identity.
I come into Chelsea, this is my new identity. Done. Fine. At United, they had Alex Ferguson for so long that you can't... They played a lot of entertaining football, especially at home. And you can't just come in and try and now tell United fans that, I'm sorry, this is how it needs to happen, but we've won things for decades using this other way. Why are you telling us now that we need to change? So it's harder for him to instill that at United. It's also, for such a good manager, he doesn't last more than two seasons anywhere. I mean, he's Chelsea's legendary number one icon. It's not a player. It's not Lampard. It's not Drogba. It's not, you know, Abramovich is above these guys. Mourinho is the icon, the Chelsea icon. And he can't even last for more than a year and a half there. It's just
three,
crazy. It's just the toxicity he brings in must be so high for him to not manage to just stay at Chelsea. Like, it's insane. I can't fathom that he can't do
well,
that.
Well, if you know, and Wenger, who hasn't had the production or the victories that Mourinho's had, still stays in one place. Yeah. But for better or for worse, he's still there. And obviously Ferguson was there for years at United. So you're right. I think that's a very good question. Why is it that Mourinho gets results right away and then is poisonous within 2 years and is gone?
Yeah.
There's something going on. And that happens in other sports where, you know, in other team sports in North America, where coaches come in and have an immediate impact, but over the long term, they're toxic. The players don't want to play for them anymore. They play so badly to get rid of them, which is what happened to Mourinho.
We were talking about this earlier as well, about how he comes in with such a short-term plan. That first season or second season where he just builds first season, second season we win the league, and then everybody just goes, like, they're tired. It's been such a hectic two seasons of just machine, win the league. He did it with Inter Milan. He had the oldest squad in the world ever. He brought them in, whatever, Schneider and Eto'o and the defensive mid and Milito and whoever it was. And he just said, I'm here. I want a treble. In the history books, it's unbelievable. But then you left that team in such dire straits.
They still haven't recovered.
They haven't recovered from that treble and amazing season. And is that how you should manage? I mean, that's what Arsene Wenger always says. You know, I do the best thing in the long term. But that's what he does. He sucks all the energy out of this group of players that the third season, I just can't do it anymore. I'm done. I've kind of achieved my goal and it's like, done, finished.
And you can't underestimate, having covered sports and covered locker rooms and talked to players on teams in different sports, how players can shape the future of the manager. Like, you know, people talk about, if the manager, you know, left because of this, that, the other thing. If the players decide he's not the guy,
right,
they can make him gone.
You're not going to replace 20 guys.
Yeah.
You're going to replace one guy.
And it just takes a few players like Hazard. If I recall the Mourinho's last year, Hazard had a bad year, didn't play well, was hurt, but he also didn't play like he gave a crap.
No.
And it showed. And so, to me, when I remember seeing Chelsea play that year before Mourinho left, I said, he's got to be gone because the players don't want to play for him anymore.
Yeah.
You know, he uses people up.
It's right? funny that Mourinho is literally at Hazard's mercy because he's their only really standout kind of superstar. And mm-hmm. if he decides to just sulk around, it's done. Like, you're gone. Like,
a bit like Sanchez and Arsenal,
yeah.
too.
Yeah. yeah. Well, we wait for the day that Pogba decides he's had it, and that'll be that.
Well, we almost saw a little wobble recently. Yeah. Let's talk Liverpool.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, Liverpool, you kind of roll the die, and you're kind of like...
God, I feel happier already.
Yeah, yeah. You just roll the die, and you go, what did they do this week? It could yeah. be anything on this range.
Totally. And it's like cheering for the Dutch.
Yeah.
Except week to week, instead of every 4 years.
It's just random. It's like, oh, they won. Okay,
yeah.
great.
Fantastic. Yeah, no, they're... And, like, I came to Liverpool sort of... the backstory is back in the 70s when I was into soccer as like a teenager. The Liverpool teams of the 70s with Kevin Keegan and Steve Highway and all these fellows were a great first division team, of course, back in those days. And I just remember thinking they were a pretty good team. So when I got back in sort of in the Premier League about a decade ago, I didn't really have a team. But I just thought to myself, I remember the Liverpool teams of those years ago. So I started following them then. And we had that incredible run with Brendan Rodgers and Suarez, that fantastic, where they almost won it. Which was so yeah. fabulous. Like, it was a fabulous team. Yeah. It was a great run. It was just fun. They
Even
played.
Earlier than that, with the Mascherano, Torres, yeah. Gerard, Javier Alonso. Oh, yeah, of course. Yeah, yeah. That was a Champions League winning team. Yeah, yeah. That team was phenomenal.
Yeah, yeah. yeah. So they had these great... And they played a fun game, and it was just exciting to watch. And then they sort of gone off kilter a bit. And now Klopp, who I'm a big fan of, I think he's great. I mean, he's a guy I'd want to play for. You know, he's the anti-Mourinho in so many ways. And I think you see that kind of... unpredictability and that sort of explosive energy, and also negative. Like when they lose, he's very he emotes, right? So the team kind of again draws off that. They draw that energy from him, and the fans do as well. They love him, but then he pulls his hair out and they lose, and they all oh my god, it's all over. And so as a fan, you like you said, it's really like you close your eyes, you put your finger up, what happened? I don't want to look right now. I can't. It's like being in a scary movie. Oh my, is there someone around the corner? I don't know. yeah. It's a bit like that with them, right?
But it's incredibly entertaining. Would any part of you swap it for a bit more consistency, or do you just enjoy the ride?
I enjoy the ride, yeah. But that's just me. I think I've watched a lot of sports over the years, so I think I've always been more, you know, entertained. I look for entertainment almost more than victory, you know.
Right.
It's as weird as that sounds.
Not to be too
maybe that's why I cheer for the Dutch, or did for so long, because it wasn't about results; it was how they got there.
Not to be too morbid, but we're all gonna die. Yeah. And how many trophies Arsenal have won in my lifetime won't matter to me as when I'm dead. What will matter is how much I've enjoyed the ride.
Right. Yeah.
So
right.
It's one of those where it's like, I see that point of view. It's like I'm enjoying the ride. Mm-hmm. It depends on how much you enjoy a trophy. It would be nice, of course, once mm-hmm. in a while. But it's not like I don't want to play like the Chelsea's did under Mourinho. I don't want to play like mm-hmm. the United did. I don't mm-hmm. want to do that. I want to come second and third and still feel competitive, but enjoy the ride too. But back to your point about Klopp mm-hmm. and Mourinho, I think mm-hmm. a very good point is that Klopp will have that negative and like, yes, I'm so angry.
Yeah.
But he doesn't then turn it onto the players.
No.
He throws players
right.
under the bus. He doesn't then sulk for a week in training. He doesn't say the whole world is against us. Mm-hmm. Klopp will say, yes, it was our fault. We didn't do well here. And he snaps out of it, and then he's back to his, okay, next week.
Yeah.
Mourinho will kind of let it linger mm-hmm. for as long as mm-hmm. he can, because he enjoys that feeling mm-hmm. in general.
Well, he also, sorry, Tom, go ahead.
No, I was just going to, my big concern with Liverpool, and we've seen it already with the departure of Coutinho, is trying to keep players there. And again, ownership is another question, because, you know, Salah, who's having this phenomenal year, this remarkable discovery, and who's turned the league on its head, and he's scored another one on Sunday mm-hmm. and an assist, will he stay? You know, he may want to play for Klopp, but somebody, Barcelona, Real, someone's going to wave big cash in front of him, and he's going to be gone. That's the heartbreaking part as a Liverpool fan, is thinking to myself, some of these guys aren't going to be here in another year, not because they don't want to.
Right.
And not because they don't love the guy, but they just will take the money.
That was so professional. I just realized, because he said on Sunday, and today's
yep.
Sunday.
Yep.
And I said today, but he realizes that people are going to listen. And I was like, oh.
I caught
like,
that too.
Damn it. Yeah, like, I wish I had done that. You know?
Years of practice.
But I just learned something new. And,
here you go. Anytime.
Yeah.
Yeah. But anyway, so the long-term answer is and we're thinking about going to see Liverpool on our next soccer trip thing in April. But and not because we have a Chelsea fan, we have a Arsenal fan, we have a Palace fan or Hull fan?
Anyway, okay.
Or City fan, sorry, and me. So, but everybody wants to see Liverpool.
Yeah.
Everybody wants to go to Anfield and wants to see. I'd go see City play because it'd be fun to watch too.
Yeah.
But if I'm gonna have a choice to go to Anfield to see Liverpool, this club plays, I want to see them.
How many games do you usually get to when you go over?
We try to get to three.
Okay.
So this will be our fifth trip if we plan it out right, and we're just checking the schedule. Normally, as you know, later in the year, every game is listed right now as a Sunday game, but they could be Saturdays and Sundays and Monday night and that sort of thing. So
hard to plan those overseas trip when they just go FA Cup games. Then we have to go from Saturday to Sunday.
We'll go anyway. We don't. As I mentioned to you when we set this all up, we've gone to see like First Division and the League One and Championship. We don't care. We saw Sheffield Wednesday 2 years ago. Man, it was just a gas. It was just great, you know. So we don't mind where we end up. We just love the atmosphere. We love the songs. Mm-hmm. We just like the traditions. So we can go to the Emirates one day and Sheffield Wednesday the next. Right.
Yeah.
So
awesome. Yeah. No, I mean, we had that. The game that we were all at
was
listed on a Saturday and then
moved
to the Sunday.
That's right.
And Mohamed and I had to give up going to see Barcelona against Valencia.
Oh, wow.
Because of the Arsenal game.
Oh, really?
And Valencia actually beat Barcelona at the Camp Nou that day. It would have been incredible, but there you go.
I was lucky. I got to see Barcelona a year later, like three times. We went to Spain. It was fantastic.
Yeah.
Neymar was still there. We keep going
to England. And I think, we could go to Spain. We could go to... We've talked about actually going to a game in England then taking the train to Paris and seeing the PSG play. That's still in the works maybe someday. But the England thing is because you can see so much in a relatively small space in the same day. You can even see two matches depending on how it works out. Wherever we end up, it'll be a hoot. It always is.
Nice.
Cool. Everton, Crystal Palace?
Sure. Wayne Rooney and Gylfi Sigurdsson back in the side. So we discussed last week how weird it was that Allardyce dropped both of them for the Arsenal game. It's just like, again, we said, I understand not having both of them in your team necessarily at the same time, but leaving out all your creative players, it just made no sense. So they were back. Sigurdsson got the first goal.
He's a very good player. I mean, he's just a very good player.
He's wonderful. Crystal Palace, we've talked about this a couple of times. When Crystal Palace were going through their bad run at the beginning of the season, mm-hmm. their fans would say, wait till we've got Zaha back.
Yeah.
And we were kind of like, yeah, he's good, but like, can't be that much of a difference, right? But it was.
Yeah.
Like, he came back, good. They started winning some games. Now he's out again, and it looks terrible.
Well, we saw a Palace game 3 years ago against West Ham, and he was in the lineup, and he was the best player on the pitch. Like, he's very retail. I'm surprised, like, other clubs aren't going for him, actually.
He didn't do it at United. He didn't work out. A lot of people will say Zaha's probably the best player outside of the top six. I mean, you've got the Leicester, Mahrez, and Vardy, but, like, he's very up there in terms of outside the top six, you'd start, you know, Zaha would be maybe top three.
Right.
You've got Mahrez, Zaha, like, he's definitely up there. He's a very good player.
Mm-hmm.
And he's relatively consistent when he plays, he's effective.
Yeah. But he's a bit brittle, or at least he seems to be injury prone. At least he has been the last few years. He doesn't seem to be capable of playing an entire season or even most of a season.
Yeah.
And I'm sure that must scare teams off. Players of that quality, but who have a tendency to have either bad luck.
I don't know what his professional as well, like, kind of reputation is in terms of training and this and that. We hear things at United a bit where it was wobbly, but.
You're talking about David Moyes' daughter. That's what you're talking about.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. wow. Just a deep dive.
Yeah.
I'll pass.
Just the last thing on this game. I didn't realize this, but you know, a few months ago, where Allardyce was recorded or overheard doing an impression of Roy Hodgson, amongst other things.
Right.
And it turned out that Hodgson was asked before the game whether Allardyce had apologised for this, and it turned out no. And then Allardyce was asked about it, and he was like, well, I called once and it went to voicemail, so I tried. And I was just like, are you adults? Like, what is going on? This is weird.
Yeah, that's true.
Anyway, Stoke 1, Brighton 1, obviously the game of the week. I've always got time for Charlie Adam missing a last-minute penalty.
Yes,
that's funny.
And wasn't there? Didn't I saw it on YouTube or somewhere? But wasn't there a fight over who would take that penalty?
Yes.
Didn't he sort of take the ball away from? I can't remember who it was.
Hesse, I think it was.
Yeah. It was like almost had a scrap right there on the pitch.
Literally
take the ball.
Opposite players in the spectrum of possible styles. Charlie Adams and Hesse. Swansea beat Burnley 1-0. Swansea are on an unbelievable run of form. It's insane. Mm-hmm.
Since Carvajal came in, they've won 7 of 11.
They beat Liverpool.
They beat Arsenal. Yeah. They drew with someone else who's good. I can't remember.
Even beating Burnley, a lot of teams do not get points against Burnley.
Yeah.
Trying to see, they had this form table where they were just
Like since the new year, they're probably like top five or something.
Yeah,
right?
That's right. Carlos Carvajal also, he's a bugger for a great quote, and he's done it again. We put in Andre Ayew, Tammy Abraham. We had three attackers in the middle. We put all the meat in the barbecue, all the meat inside the grill, because we wish a lot to win this game.
Nice.
I just love it.
Nice.
So yeah, he has those moments. Twitter likes don't really work.
What do you mean?
Like you like something, and then you go look for it a day later, and it's gone.
Or you like too many things.
That's true.
That's not a bad thing. Liking things is good.
Right?
Yeah.
Don't really turn into Mourinho.
Yeah. There you go.
West Ham beat, who is it? I can't see the sheet.
Watford.
Oh, Watford are on literally the opposite of a Swansea right now. They're just not looking very good. New manager, doing okay after losing who I thought one of the best managers in the league.
Marco Silva.
But West Ham are another one of those teams where you don't know what you're going to get.
Nope.
And Chicharito seems to be on a good run.
He's on a good run, yeah.
They signed, what's his name, Alex? Some other names.
Who?
Centre mid, new guy from Inter Milan.
Oh, João Mário.
Yeah, João Mário. He's got, 3-4 assists already in two games. He seems to be doing the business for them.
Yeah. No, I mean, my only real note from this was that afterwards Moyes said that he wants to push for a top 10 finish, which is lovely, but they're also only 5 points clear of relegation. So, that's 2 weeks of bad results and you're back in it.
Yeah.
Arnautovic is back from injury. He's an important player for them. I mean, yes, I know they signed him for, ludicrous, for 25, 30 million or whatever it was, but he's one of their better players. Mm-hmm. I mean, after I think they sold Ayew, if I'm not mistaken, to Swansea already. Yes. So it's really him and Chicharito are kind of. Lanzini is a great player too, but they have okay players. Mm-hmm. You just need to get it out of them. That's all. Mm-hmm. Doesn't help that they're playing away from home.
Didn't Watford just whack somebody though?
They did last week. They
beat Chelsea.
Right. Chelsea 4-1 was it? Yeah.
So that was unbelievable from Chelsea.
Yeah.
Who did Chelsea play tomorrow? Well, on Monday
they play West Brom, which doesn't sound that exciting, except that I read this week that the last two Chelsea managers to have been sacked were sacked after losing to West Brom. And Conte is trying to get sacked.
The tone has changed, though, from Conte, in the last week. He used to be whatever, this is horrendous. But the last few weeks, Cahill came out saying, we really back the manager, everything is great, and we're going to try our best. Conte came out recently saying, I'm fully committed here, I want to try my best. I just feel the tone has changed over the week, and I didn't expect Conte to come out and say that. That's all.
That's an odd story. That whole Chelsea thing is a very strange tale.
They just have the reputation of sacking managers like that.
So but it's gone sideways so fast. I mean, they won the Premier League a couple years ago, right? So how
their signings have been horrendous.
The signings have been bad, but I also think it's kind of being overplayed, and I think part of that is Conte's fault because he keeps telling us, or has until maybe this week, that our squad's not good enough, the season's going to be very difficult, we're doing well to be even in the top four. But if you look at the season they're having, on paper, it's actually not that bad. Mm-hmm. It looks worse because City are 20 points ahead, but Chelsea aren't really doing that badly.
It's also bad because the badness, I guess, came all in a row, boom, 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 and they just look in a bad slump of a month.
Plus they're losing at home, at the Bridge, which is one of the more difficult places to win on the road in the Premier League, and now it's got that the mystery is out of it a little bit. Almost like United, playing at Old Trafford is not quite the same. They're not invincible at home anymore, and so I think that may be a factor psychologically that plays into that larger narrative where things have gone sideways. He's gone. It's all done. But he's a pretty good manager. I don't get it.
He's great. I mean, if they do get rid of him, he'll have. I have no doubt that he'll have one of the biggest jobs in the world.
Totally. I mean, he also, to be fair, he did copy his 5-5-3-2 from Greg Vanney.
Yeah, of course, so yeah.
We can't forget that. So, I don't know how good he is.
Or may tell you how good Vanney is.
Right? Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Huddersfield beat Bournemouth 4-1.
I have nothing to say about this, unfortunately for Huddersfield, because it looks like they did well.
I think giving people the score is quite more than enough.
All I can say is I've actually been to where Bournemouth plays. We saw Bournemouth play Sheffield Wednesday 4 years ago.
Nice.
And it's parked. If you ever, it's the seats 14,000.
Yeah.
Right. It's tiny. Yeah. It's literally it's a bandbox.
You get more seats at high schools around here.
Seriously, yeah. Sure. But it's a wonderful place to see a game. And Bournemouth is a beautiful town. Here's my little tourist tip for you.
My grandfather on my dad's side used to live there. Because once you're old in England, you just get on a bus automatically sends you to Bournemouth. And I don't remember much. The beach was nice.
Yeah, it's pretty. There
was fish and chips on the water.
Sounds lovely.
It's a pretty town, actually. Yeah.
I actually thought that when Bournemouth joined the league, they'd have a year or two, and then they would have to expand their capacity.
Yeah.
But it seems to be.
It's expensive. You gotta make sure that you're gonna stay in the league, and it's so volatile that you start a big project of expansion, and all of a sudden you get relegated.
I agree. Yeah. I was under the impression that it was compulsory, but I guess not. That'll do for the Premier League. Let's do some moo-moos.
Happy moo-moo. One thing we are no sha, Mumu no fit sleep forever. One day Mumu go wake up.
All right, we will start Mumu of the Week this week with the Huddersfield game that we were just talking about, and how, you know, we spoke about how we didn't really know what happened in that game. But here's something we do know. During the game, one of the Huddersfield substitutes was getting ready to come onto the field, presumably, and was changing.
Great choice of words.
Yep. And was changing, and as he did so, pulled down his shorts and whatever was underneath them, if there was anything underneath them, revealing everything.
Yes. It was the full Monty.
It was the full Monty.
The whole tactical plan was revealed. Everything
And the funny thing is, I mean, we'll put the... I think we tweeted the video, or retweeted it. We didn't have the original footage. So you can see it on our Twitter feed. But the funny thing is about this is that it's actually just a video of David Wagner, the coach, just kind of pacing up and down.
Yeah.
You have to focus on the background to see what's going on.
Which makes you wonder... who spotted it and why?
Yes. Yeah, they're like, well, here we go.
If I'm looking past the manager at that.
I've got a lot of little ones that were just across the week. One of them was The Sun. The Sun had a full page spread on Ryan.
You could have ended that at The Sun.
Yeah. Ryan Sessegnon apparently is killing it, player of the month, and they had a full spread on him.
This is the Fulham winger.
The Fulham, left back winger. He plays, wing back. Kind of, the people are comparing him to Bale. And their whole front page is a full spread, or the spread is a full whatever thing about him. And unfortunately, the picture they chose, which is huge across the whole page, is not of Sessegnon. It's just another
Presumably another black player.
Yes, exactly. And just any of the black players on the Fulham team, they just put him on. Another one was Lucas Perez. He's on loan at...
Deportivo.
And apparently they're not enjoying his performance, so they spray-painted the side of his building saying, "Lucas Perez, please leave."
Right.
And then some guy printed out a small piece of A4 paper and stuck it there saying, "Lucas Perez doesn't live here anymore."
That's great.
Another one. I've got two more quick ones. One of them was a goal went in the Paraguayan league, and they showed the guy celebrating, and they showed the fans, and the caption is how they celebrate goals in Paraguay. And you could just see this lady literally in the stands snorting coke off this mirror.
I mean,
in the stands.
You got to enjoy the moment, you know?
But they just scored. I mean, if it was a dire game, maybe, but...
You know, you said it. We're all going to die. What's more important, trophies or how you enjoy the game week to week?
Was she a fan of the losing team or the winning
team? No, she was celebrating the goal.
Oh, okay.
She was like, you know what? This calls for this.
Yes, indeed.
Obviously,
they do a lot of heavy-duty searching before you go into a match in Paraguay.
I mean, you could possibly just buy that in the concession
stand. I never thought of that.
Last but not least, a lot of talk about VAR recently. So in Boavista, I'm not sure what league it is.
Portugal.
They use VAR, and then you can see what the VAR footage is that the referee's looking at. So he calls for the VAR, does the whole hand signal thing, goes over, and then you're trying to see the clip, but unfortunately during the moment of the decision, there's a huge flag that waves across, like one of those big flags.
The supporter flags. Yeah.
And you think, he can't see that. No way. Referee comes off, goes, yep, goal. It's like, what did he use? What kind of information was used to make that call?
He just doubled down. He's like, I've gone for this.
North America has, the NFL has a replay flag, but apparently they have one over there too.
Fantastic. So, yeah, a lot of moments this week. Just loved it. Enjoyed it.
Interestingly too, Portugal legalized all drugs in the early 2000s. I wonder if, you know, we don't see any footage of that, but presumably.
Yeah. Why wouldn't you do it at a football stadium? It's your day out, it's a Saturday.
you probably have a joint or two.
Yeah, if it's allowed.
Yeah.
I mean, you'll sell more snacks, so.
Good point, a lot more munchies. Anything else? I think that's it.
I think that's enough.
All right.
Happy Mumu. One thing we are no sha, Mumu no fit sleep forever. One day Mumu go wake up.
We will start the European segment now. Italy, Spal.
Always sounds like some KGB faction. I just can't help it. Or a weapon. The spell.
Still don't know what it means. Could have looked it up any week.
Isn't it an acronym? We talked about
it. Yeah, it's an acronym. But okay. Sporting something.
Is that a luncheon meat?
It does sound like that, yeah. Anyway, they lost 4-0 at home to Milan.
Who haven't lost in five games under Gattuso or something like that. Their best
one. Yeah. Gattuso came in and everyone rightfully considered it a bit of a joke. He's a fun character, but had no managerial pedigree. But he's doing really well. They haven't lost in eight.
Actual words in the latest press conference is AC Milan, sometimes good, sometimes shit. And he walked out. He's like, you know what? That is a fair.
Players like guys like that.
Yeah. And we were actually talking a couple of weeks ago. Milan won a game, and he came onto the center of the pitch, and the players surrounded him and all started hitting him. And afterwards, you know, the reporters were like, what was going on there? And he was basically like, look, sometimes the players are going to be angry at me. I'd rather they did this in this way instead of kind of backstabbing me in the dressing room or what have you. Yeah. Like, the substitutes can get their anger out. Yeah. It works very well. You can tell
from the hits who was the substitute and who started the game.
Yeah. You know what, though? That sounds like, again, we get back to former players, especially recently removed. Other players, he knows how to speak to them. He understands what they're going through, and for a short period of time, at least, it may work.
Short period of time, it works.
Exactly. So this weekend in Serie A actually started off on Friday night. Juventus went away to Fiorentina, and they beat them 2-0. It was actually quite a relatively easy victory. Fiorentina were given a penalty in the 18th minute, but again, with the VAR, it got cancelled. So I think it was Jordan Veretout, the former Aston Villa player, was standing there with the ball for 3 minutes waiting to take this penalty. And in the end, it got given as a free kick to Juventus for an offside before the penalty incident. Yeah. So it's just interesting how VAR is changing.
Well, that's also going to take time, like it did with other leagues, to figure out what the official way to use it.
My only concern, someone on Twitter had a really, really good point saying that if this VAR starts taking 3 to 4 minutes, it's not long until you start seeing ads over that and that would kill me. Like, by the time the ref are doing their thing, people are like, well, let's just get a 3-minute add in, and that would ruin everything.
I suspect short term you may see more 3-minute breaks than you will in a year. Like, I think these are going to be the growing pains, I suspect.
I just feel like, again, it's not about VAR, like, I don't want to get too much in, but I just feel like someone else can make the decision. The main ref doesn't have to walk over and make a decision. You can have a referee that you trust in front of the screen that tells the referee, well, cancel it.
Isn't that exactly what's going on?
No, he has to walk all the way there, look at it himself.
Well, that's how it works in, say, the National Football League, right? The actual referee. Plus, then there's people in New York who are watching it with him, and they sort of arrive at an agreement. In the NFL, it can be really slow, as you know, if you watch. Other times, it's quite quick. I think VAR, I actually think it's a good thing. And so it's the one league in the world. This was discussed in 2010 after the famous Lampard goal, that why haven't we got this at the biggest sporting event in the world? I remember doing a story on it. Mm-hmm. You know, other leagues in the world already have replays. So we won't get into the reads on it, but I think people have to be patient. It's going to take a while to get the rhythm of this thing in football, but it's going to come. It'll be fine.
After 2010, they did get their goal line technology, so at least there was that. Because that's great. The ref just looks at his watch. I enjoy that a lot, but it's because it's quick and it's...
And it's so rarely used. Yeah. That's the other thing. It happens more in other sports than it does in soccer.
Yeah. For sure. The only other thing to say about this game is Buffon finally reached 500 appearances. He's been on 499 for a while, and he kind of came back into the side.
Chesney had something like ridiculous, like 13 clean sheets in a row or something.
But, you know, obviously Twitter was awash with Buffon tribute pictures and what have you. He really has become almost fetishized at this point.
Well, he's a legend of the incredible game. Player. When Italy didn't make the World Cup, he was crying and he was really sad. He apologized to everybody. But at the end of the day, I think he's one of the best keepers in the history of the game. He's a legend.
So. And beloved, like everywhere around the world, but not just Italian fans. Everybody loves him. That's true.
So Juventus winning put them a point ahead of Napoli in the title race.
And if everyone who doesn't know, like, this podcast kind of supports Napoli this season?
Yeah. Just, I mean, you know...
Wait a minute, what?
We have an affinity...
No one told me.
We have an affinity for Roma because we went there and we saw a game and we saw Totti score 2 goals.
The two last-minute goals that got him his new contract for a bit. Oh, it was unbelievable. The best part of our trip.
And so we have that natural affinity, but given Roma are well off the pace... And we'd just like anyone other than Juventus to win the league.
Right.
Not that even we don't even dislike Juventus. No. It's just, you know.
Change it up.
Exactly. Yeah. And Napoli play some wonderful football. Anyway, so Juve beat Fiorentina. Sorry, they went 2 points ahead of Napoli because they were a point behind. And the pressure was then on Napoli, who now play, I think the rest of their games are going to be after Juventus play because they're playing in the Europa League. So Napoli will always play on Sunday. And so they'll always have this pressure as long as Juve keep winning.
Yeah, and then Napoli did nothing but go and concede in the third minute.
Conceded in the third minute to Stefan De Vrij against Lazio. And at that point, you're thinking, uh-oh, this is the weekend the dream dies, right? Yeah. Juventus are coming back. And then Napoli went and blitzed Lazio, scored four, just hammered them. And it was, you could see the relief in the stadium on the players' faces. Once they went 2-1 up, they knew they had it. And it was...
Sarri is doing an unbelievable job at Napoli. His philosophy, he plays the game the same way every game, the way he wants to play it. And he never kind of lets go of his mantra or whatever you want to call it, his philosophy. And he's so passionate. He's similar to Klopp. So they scored their 1-1 equalizing goal, and for some reason he was mad that something got ejected out of the stadium. Like, you just scored your, and he's still not happy. He got mad at something, and he's really, really doing so well this season. Napoli, I think, are probably the top team to watch, close to Liverpool, close to in Europe this season. They're so much fun to watch. Their front four are phenomenal. They play the game the way everybody should play.
Yeah, the only issue with them is that they have such a small squad.
Yeah,
and so they kind of had to. They couldn't navigate the Champions League group stage because they just couldn't do it two games in a week. So they went out of that. They're now in the Europa League. They should be a contender for it, but it's their only opportunity to rest their players. So I think they're probably going to crash out of that as soon as possible and focus on the
league. The league is a very possible opportunity right now, so I think they should really focus on that one.
Yeah. And last result, Inter 2, Bologna 1. Inter hadn't won, I think, in about 6 or 7 games. They're still not looking good. Apparently, a bunch of the players got into an argument this week and started unfollowing each other on Instagram and what have you. And
passive aggressive.
And
really, it's high school.
Spalletti, the manager, was. I got this from another podcast. So, but apparently, Spalletti.
What? There's more.
I know. I
thought we were the only ones.
Well, it was a rude awakening for
not
me too.
Not
many
Blazers.
Spalletti, the Inter manager, was in a restaurant in Rome, and he noticed some Roma fans. And he thought, apparently, oh, I'm going to get some stick here. And they left him alone. And he actually went and then spoke to them at the end once he got up from his meal and said, you know, hi, how you doing, guys, blah, blah, blah. And then started kind of opening his heart to them, saying, oh, you know, I left Roma because of this and that. But it turns out the situation's pretty similar here at Milan and at Inter, and they don't want to spend money, and this is wrong and that's wrong. And obviously he was being recorded the whole time, so...
It's hard to just be human sometimes as this like famous figure where everything's like, oh well, I can sell this quote now for a little bit, you know. Like,
that's pretty unusual. I've never heard anything up like that. That's quite something.
No. Anyway, so Napoli 63 points, Juventus 62, Inter miles away on 48, Lazio 46, Roma play well right now, but we'll see. So yeah, that's Italy.
Yeah.
You want to tell us about Spain?
Yeah, let's talk about Spain. Barcelona drew. Did that game end in a draw eventually?
Nil-nil.
Yeah. 0-0 to Getafe, if I'm not mistaken. Getafe, who, by the way, on the 80th minute brought on Mathieu Flamini.
Nice.
Unbelievable. You know, just to shore up that defense against Messi and co. It's amazing that he still has, you know, contracts and he's still playing and all that. So yeah, Barcelona dropping points there. They didn't look their best. Coutinho subbed off in the 60th minute or so. Still not really hitting the ground running. He scored last week, but still not kind of gelling in that Barcelona side.
Mm-hmm.
Suarez not so good. Dembele came on and just looked horrendous again. I don't know why.
Was that his first game back from injury?
I don't think it was his first, but he's just, I don't know. I mean, I know Chelsea were really, really worried, especially with their form, about playing Barcelona in the Champions League soon. But if Barca played this week, because they haven't been phenomenal. Like, yes, they've been getting the points, sometimes late on in games, etc. But it's slightly not, you know, at that Barcelona level that we know, and they drew this game, and lucky for them, Madrid aren't doing very well, and you know, mm-hmm. they did this match day, they won 4-1 against, who was it?
I think it was 5-2 against Sociedad.
Oh, 5-2 against Sociedad, Ronaldo hat-trick.
Yep.
Perfect hat-trick, left foot, right foot header.
Good really? Game.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, the first perfect hat-trick this season. He's really good at kind of combining stats, so he'll go for like 3 games not scoring, then he'll score 3, and then all of a sudden he'll be like, well look, he has tons of goals.
Yeah. Well, Real Madrid kind of ramping up in time. They've got PSG. I'm not sure whether it's this week or next week, but that is going to be a game.
That'll be fun.
These two teams that domestically are having weird seasons. I mean, PSG are 15 points ahead, but they still rarely look convincing. And we watched a bit of the game this week by mistake because it was just on. it's just on. I can't forget who they're playing. Toulouse or...
Yeah, and Neymar scored like a deflected goal. Like it was, yeah, it was a bit...
They just stroll around. Yeah. They don't need to... Mm-hmm. It's a very weird situation.
Mm-hmm. I think this game, again, we talked about it last week, both managers are playing for their position, Zidane here and Unai Emery here. And I think both these teams really want the Champions League. And I think Unai Emery is only as good as his kind of Champions League deliverance. They're going to keep switching managers at PSG until the Champions League. Mm-hmm. The league, no one cares.
Yep. No, I remember going to see Real when they were here. Remember they played TFC?
Yeah.
Exhibition game before their seasons. It was July, 2009 maybe, or 2010. And I remember thinking to myself, I'm like, do I really want to go? And their tickets were, they jacked the price up. And I said, you know what? It was like going to see the Beatles. Because it was Ronaldo.
Is that Ronaldo's first season, 09?
It might have been.
Maybe
was first. It was, yeah. I think it was 09. And Robin was on the team.
Oh.
And Schneider was on the team.
And Van der Vaart and stuff.
And they were loaded. And I said, you know what? It's like going to see the Beatles. What the heck? So I spent like, I don't know how much, $100 or whatever on the ticket. But it was worth it. They won 5-2. And Ronaldo scored a step over goal. And it was, and Robin scored. It was worth it. Yeah.
I'm surprised that 2009 TFCs managed to get two.
They did. Does your Di Rosario have one of them? Yeah.
Amazing.
Barca sitting. Atleti also won. They beat Malaga 1-0. They scored. Griezmann scored in the third minute, and then nothing happens for the rest of the game. So Barca with 59, Atleti with 52, and Madrid with 42.
Wow.
That's...
Really?
Yeah. I mean, again, it's Champions League for Madrid this season and nothing else. They're out of the Copa del Rey, which Barca are in the final now for the fifth year running. I think it's a record that they've broken.
Ridiculous.
The funny thing in Spain is that usually you get a neutral venue for the Copa del Rey final. It's not like Wembley. You get a neutral venue, and every year Barca are in it, they ask to play at the Bernabeu.
Mm-hmm.
And every season, the Bernabeu comes up with an excuse as to why that can't happen. Last year, the toilets weren't ready. The year before, the sewage had this issue that it needed to be fixed. It just, Perez will not have Barcelona win a trophy on their ground.
Perez is busy that day.
It's going to happen again. They always do it. It's formality. They just send in the request. Yeah. You get back some bullshit excuse from Perez about why, sorry, this stadium's
not available. I don't blame him. I mean, their fans would hate it.
Of course.
Yeah, I'm with him.
Yeah.
A man of the people. If there ever was one.
He'll always remember just for that, if nothing else.
I think that pretty much wraps up Spain. I mean, Barca should really win the league with, what, 10?
They'll win it in April. In fact, I think that's the case in a lot of the leagues. I mean, Bayern Munich will win it very early. City should win it. In fact, there's a chance that Manchester City will win it in their game against United at Old Trafford in April. So that would be a thing.
Yeah.
Oh, man, the amount of buses parked that game. It's going to be phenomenal. Replacement bus services, anything.
Exactly.
Perfect.
Anyway, we will leave it there. Tom, thank you so much for joining us.
A pleasure. Great to be with you guys.
Where can we find you on the internet?
I'm on Instagram at CBC Tom and on Twitter at CBC Tom. And I'm active on the Twitter machine, as you probably are aware. Mm-hmm. And so that's pretty much it.
Cool. Can you remind us again about when your show name and when it's out?
So I host the Worldless Hour, which is the national international newscast. If you want to know what's going on in the world other than football, then listen to that show.
Is it other stuff?
Yeah, I know, really. I wonder myself. But yeah, so it's an hourly newscast. It's like 4.5 minutes on every hour on the hour across the country. I'm on there 5 days a week.
Cool.
Perfect.
Do you, we were going to end there, but do you find football, is it escapism for you?
There are days doing the work that I do that are really hard because sometimes you read some pretty terrible things. There's a lot of bad stuff happening and it's pretty depressing. So football is a diversion. It's when it's really good. When it's really bad, even still, it's a diversion.
It's
a diversion. And because I played and because now as a reporter, I'm sort of digressing here a bit, but for years as a sports reporter in Montreal and even in Toronto, I do stories on the game. I would do stories in the local team. When the World Cup would happen, I'd do stories in the pubs. All those stories you see about people hanging out in pubs, I was doing those 25, 30 years ago locally. No one did that stuff.
Right.
No one reported on, no TV, local TV reporter covered soccer the way I did. And because I love the game and I didn't understand why the rest of you didn't understand. Love the game. I used to describe it. I remember, I'll tell you an anecdote. I was on TVO years ago as a regular sort of a sports panelist with Steve Paikin on the show, the old Studio 2. It was before the World Cup in South Korea. And so it was 2002. So we were on talking about the World Cup, and he knows I love the game, and he said, and he's not a big fan. So he said to me, okay, I'll give you a minute. Tell me why I should watch the World Cup. So I told him, and he said, okay, I'll watch. And one of the things I said was, it's a sport that I love jazz, and I said I think soccer is very close to jazz, in which you have a structured musical arrangement, but within it you have innovation and creativity that's allowed. So that's encouraged, in fact, and players play off one another, and sometimes you create something really amazing within the structure of a body of music. I said that's what soccer is to me, and it's not about, you know, goals are rare. Oh, there aren't enough goals scored. But I said you have to understand how difficult it is to score a goal in soccer. That's why people go nuts when the goals are scored, because it's really hard. And I said it's the other sport that no matter where you go in the world, there's two things you can talk about: the weather and soccer. There's nothing quite like it anything else. I said for that reason alone, it's worth watching, because it's the one language in the world that everybody has in common for a month. And so for me, the game has become, years later, decades later, after doing all those stories, to see how popular the game is, to see the guys like you are doing this sort of thing. People are turning up 30,000 TFC and watching the World Cup and the Premier League and even MLS on television and talking about it. It's really exciting to me. So I'm loving the ride of soccer today and its popularity.
Yeah, all these things are perfect. And I just feel like, to me, again, football has always been about the kind of the common man's game. It's very easy to play. You know, at home you put up two pieces of rock and anything that surrounds it's not a good football.
Right.
And it's like, it's cheap to play. It's cheap to enjoy. And the bit I like a lot is that it's also all over the world. Developing countries are so into this game. It's not kind of like secluded to one part of the world. Yep. Everywhere. And now North America is really kind of on that as well. Everywhere has soccer or football. Everywhere. Like very rarely do you find a place that doesn't.
And also, to me, a couple of other things that about the game, which I think appeals to more and more people, is it's relatively safe compared to, say, football and the discussions we're having around concussions and other sports. But it doesn't, generally speaking, does not discriminate on body type. Mm-hmm. You can be small, like Maradona, or big, like Crouch, or whatever, and be effective and not be discriminated against. It's a democratic kind of a game. It's socioeconomically, you know, you can be poor and play and rich and play. It's less expensive to play than most other sports. As you said, it takes very little to play a game of soccer. So for so many reasons, and that's why the world loves it so much. That's what people say, why is it such a popular sport? I said, just start thinking about it and you'll realize you don't need a nice surface to play. Mm-hmm. I love hockey, but you don't need a dirt lot, something around, and you're good to go. So it's a wonderful, wonderful game when it's played well and when people don't act stupid.
I think that's a perfect place to end it. Tom, it's been a pleasure to have you.
Likewise,
thanks. We hope you'll come back.
Oh, absolutely. Happy to. It'll be great.
Fantastic. And we'll see you guys next week.
Thank you for downloading the KoshCast. Get in touch at underthekoshblog@gmail.com. Follow us on Twitter at under_thekosh. And for articles, predictions, and the full experience, go to underthekoshblog.com.